This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Look at the Academy Awards nominations for Best Picture this year, and you'll see something remarkable. One name is attached to two movies. Scott Rudin is the executive producer of There Will Be Blood, and he's also the producer of No Country for Old Men. That may be unusual, but it's no fluke. At age 49, Scott Rudin has been producer or executive producer of, among many other films, The Queen, The Truman Show, Searching for Bobby Fischer, Sister Act, The Firm, the list goes on and on. Rudin has been called one of the best readers of scripts, a brilliant dealmaker, an obsessive workaholic. He's also been called one of the worst bosses to work for. He says that was then. Of his two films nominated this year, Scott Rudin says he was more involved in making No Country for Old Men happen. It's directed by the Coen brothers, based on a novel by Cormac McCarthy.
I read the book and loved it, but frankly, my desire to do it was very hinged on my hope to be able to get Joel and Ethan Coen to write and direct it. Both Cormac and the Coens deal with the preponderance of evil in a world in which people are trying to be good. They both deal with genre and play with genre, in that both Cormac and the Coens like all of the chase movie, action movie, all of the aspects of the material that are within the frame of a genre, but also at the same time the movie and the book are completely subverting the rules of that genre. And I thought that in common with both of them would be a very good thing for this.
I'm looking right now at your entry in the Internet Movie Database, the IMDb.com,
yes.
One of the great websites, and you have more red print after your name, signifying projects that are in production, that have been announced, that are in pre-production, that are in post-production. When you were making these decisions about No Country for Old Men and about There Will Be Blood, these are two balls out of how many that you had in the air at that time?
We made, I think, six films last year. We're making five this year, I believe. We've always done, you know, somewhere between four and six a year. If you have the ability to get good movies made, you have the obligation to use it to make sure that good work that might not otherwise get made does get done.
I was surprised, though, not knowing that much about the film business, in reading about what you've done over the years, that being producer can mean sitting in on meetings to discuss, does this particular scene work? Does that joke work? Did the audience react? Yes, this is you're very much involved in these films.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's an enterprise, and the enterprise requires that a person be front and center on it. And that is, you know, if the producer is a capable person, that's the producer. It doesn't mean that you creatively ride roughshod over anybody. And obviously, when you make a movie with the Coens or Paul Thomas Anderson or many of the filmmakers I've worked with, your job is to create an environment for them to make their movie that's a safe and creative environment and to keep the rest of the noise away. But there's an enormous pleasure to be had in the sponsorship of this kind of filmmaking. I mean, they're spiky, bold movies. They're provocative movies. I mean, you know, No Country deals with enormous issues about how we live right now. If you have the ability and the wherewithal to create work that's basically in the discussion with the culture we're in, how could you not want to do that?
Now, hearing you describe No Country for Old Men that way, and also having seen There Will Be Blood,
mm-hmm.
I was struck by something you said some years ago. I wonder if you still believe it. You were speaking of the movie Rocky, which you said that movie changed the business. Everything had to have a happy ending. Still?
No, I think the business has changed a lot. I mean, I think what's happened is, I think the world has become a very complex place. And I think there is now an audience for what I would describe as movies that feel fundamentally authentic. You know, I look at a movie like No Country and I think it has a morally complicated worldview. It's a chase movie, it's a thriller, but it's got something much bigger on its mind. I think what people don't want is movies that pretend to have something on their mind, but in fact don't.
I think it's the Russian word poshlust that that sums up what you just described. You said that when you read Cormac McCarthy's novel, that's what got you and made you want to make a movie. But you've also said that some books make it into good films and some just don't. What's the difference? How do you know?
Sometimes the difference is who you get to make them. And it's not to say that there's nothing that guarantees that with the best of intentions you're going to be right all the time, because there are going to be many times you're not right. And I have to be careful not to get seduced by the quality of something, whether or not it lends itself to being adapted. And my experience is that the best adaptations are the ones that really excavate the material. How do you make this book, which has a literary impulse, into something in a medium that is fundamentally only about what happens next? To me, that's all movies are. And the movies that work are the ones in which somebody very smart figured out how to take all the thematic material, all the character material, all the filigree, all the beautiful writing, and put it into story. If you don't put it into story, you end up with something that feels like a hybrid, and those basically don't work.
Now I want to ask you a little bit about this Scott Rudin I read about in various profiles.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In addition to your extraordinary success as a producer, there's a character. Well, here's a line from an old Wall Street Journal piece.
Ugh.
In Mr. Rudin's office, caustic rants, shrieking threats, and impulsive firings are routine. And there are later references of things being thrown. Fair?
I think historic would be historical would be more accurate.
We're talking to a new Scott Rudin, you're saying.
Well, I think, you know, look, everybody grows up. I mean, you know, I've at various times felt a lot of pressure on myself, a lot of pressure about the quality of work we were doing. And there's an enormous amount to get done when you're, you know, if you're making a volume of movies, and don't forget, you know, we produce movies and we produce plays at the same time. There's a lot of work that gets made in this office. And, of course, it can be tense. There's always tension.
We're now going to issue one of those warnings, as before, a scene of torture or great obscenity on the air. Parents with small children can now turn the radio down. I want you to explain not going to college and deciding instead that you would simply go straight to work to become a producer and skip a formal education.
It was very simple. I felt that if I went to college, I would go away for 4 years and come back, and if I was incredibly lucky, I'd get the job I already had. And I just couldn't see a reason. I was working for Bob Whitehead in what was then the most important theatrical producing office in New York. The company had 4 shows running on Broadway and another 3 coming up in the couple of years that I worked there. It was a wild hotbed of people coming and going. I mean, I would sit in that office and it would be Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy and Katharine Hepburn and Arthur Miller and Enid Bagnold and Agnes DeMille. And what was I going to find out at Northwestern that I wasn't going to find out there?
You could have taken a course in semiotics there.
Exactly. Well, I've read some books on semiotics. I know about it now.
Well, Scott Rudin, good luck on Oscar night.
Thank you.
It's great talking with you.
You too.
Scott Rudin has produced dozens of movies, including 2 of this year's Best Picture Oscar nominees, No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood. He also produced a movie much beloved in my household, the Jane Austen update, Clueless. And you can hear that part of our conversation at our website, npr.org.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.